Thank you, Susan. Thank you to all of you for the honor of being able to share some thoughts with you today. Just a few first things. I go to a lot of meetings. They range in quality from the very good to the very bad. This one was well-structured with well-chosen topics, building in a natural way, well-chosen speakers, bringing a wide range of experience, and a schedule and physical environment that made it possible for discussion and engagement. So I think we should all join in thanking the organizers for a job extremely well done. I also want to just say a special word of thanks to our colleagues who have French first language, who have participated in the meeting either in a second language or through translation, which is always more challenging, always requires more effort. Alors, chers collègues, merci infiniment.
Thank you, dear colleagues, for your collaboration and for the special effort that you had to invest in order to do so.
Proper Vancouver accent. It's also, you know, touching to see this group of people and the dedication and participation of the people that have been attracted to this issue. Long ago, before I knew anyone here, when we had small meetings on farm animal welfare, the people who came tended to be, exaggerate a little bit and say, sort of the junkyard dogs of the status quo. You know, snarling and snapping at anyone who suggested that change might be needed in some corner or other of the industry. Not producers, interestingly. In my experience, producers were invariably more open and forward-minded than some of the people who undertook to speak for them. That is so far now in our past. And it's a pleasure to see the quality and dedication of the people who've been attracted to this issue. And it's an honor for me to be presuming to speak on your behalf and making some summing up remarks. So what did I like about this meeting? Well, first of all, I liked the fact that in Anne-Marie's presentation, in a rather long-looking evaluation process in Sweden, the first part was called Ask the Animal, and it took 5 minutes, right? Good. Well, I worked most of my life with pigs. They're a little more expressive than cattle. So I asked a pig his opinion on this issue, and I got it in 1 minute instead of five. Here's the answer, borrowing somewhat from the words of a famous English poem, and it may be right or not, but here's what I heard. What is this life if penned in tight, we have no chance to romp and fight? No chance to wander off for hours and chew the neighbor's favorite flowers? No chance when other pigs we meet to knock them flying off their feet? No chance when running men we see to play our game of can't catch me? A poor life this, if penned in tight. We have no chance to romp and fight. That's what the pig said. I'll pass on your applause. What else did I like? I like the new code development process. I like its emphasis on outcome-based, environment-based, and process-based measures. I think that is a good balance that hasn't always been captured in processes elsewhere and at other times. I like the fact that the scientists' input is more formalized, that the scientists are asked to do a thorough review of literature on key points, that this becomes an input into the process but is not the decision-making process itself. So the standards are not science-based, they are science-informed. Then the scientists and others decide on aspects of, using Jeff Rushen's term, what is acceptable, etc. All these value-based things are made by a broad agreement. But the process is science-informed. I think this is a big improvement over how we used to do things, where, yeah, there were a couple of scientists at the table, sort of functioning like stakeholders along with everyone else. I like the emphasis on consultation. When Neil Jotham chaired the first pig code in the early 1980s, Canadian Pork Council had four representatives, one from Atlantic Canada, one from Quebec, one from Ontario, one from the Western provinces. The one from the Western provinces was Weldon Newton from Neepawa. Anyone know Weldon? Good. He was a great participant, a very good choice. Code was finished. I ended up at a meeting in Alberta where I found the code was vilified. The process was rejected because it was something cooked up in Ottawa without consulting the West. Well, to Ottawa, it looked as though Neepawa, Manitoba, was part of the West. It didn't look that way from Alberta. Benjamin Disraeli apparently said, "Flattery always helps, but in the case of royalty, you lay it on with a trowel." Consultation always helps. But in a country with the tyrannous geography of Canada, where it is so easy for people to feel peripheralized, alienated from decisions being made a long ways away, consultation takes the extra time and effort that has been shown in this process. What else did I like? I liked the emphasis on non-regulatory compliance-enhancing measures. I was at a meeting in an Asian country with six other Western people brought in to make some advice on slaughter. At the end of trips and briefings, we had a final debrief with some highly placed government officials. The other Western participants were all Europeans. And they said, "You need a law on this, and you need a law on this, and you need a law on this." And the Asian official listened politely, all done through a translator, of course, and then spoke in a quiet voice and said, "Actually, we have those sort of laws. The problem is one of getting compliance." He said, "As a pilot project, they attempted for 1 month in one region to enforce the laws that they had. And at the end of the month, two of the inspectors had been murdered." They were looking for a non-regulatory approach to compliance. Now, in Canada, the backstabbing of inspectors tends to be more figurative than literal. But we still need non-regulatory compliance measures. And I was pleased at the emphasis put on that. One reason in Canada why regulation is such a problem is exactly as our Australian guest pointed out in the Australian situation, how animals are treated on the farms of Canada is almost certainly a matter of provincial and territorial jurisdiction. So to have a uniform program of a regulatory nature would require the cooperation of, I guess, 13 provincial and territorial legislatures and their legal drafters to include the codes referenced in provincial and territorial statutes in language that gave the codes equal status. I think this is a thing we should work toward. I think in dealing with trading partners and our own consuming public, it would be reassuring to say, these are the standards agreed, these are the regulatory instruments that give them the same weight, some legal weight, and the same weight across the country. I think this would be a good package to present to our public and our trading partners, but it's a distant goal that we should be working toward in the meantime, and most of our effort needs to go into non-regulatory measures. I also liked the emphasis on making the process valuable for producers, not just at the level of a license to practice, a license to operate, but actually valuable on the farm. And we saw some examples of benchmarking and so on, where applying animal welfare science, animal welfare standards, actually has a benefit and is perceived as positive by the producer. In our own case, we had two graduate students visit 40 dairy farms in the Fraser Valley, monitoring things as basic as lameness, hawk lesions, the sort of things that Anne-Marie was talking about. Farmers were extremely pleased to get the feedback they didn't really have. It's not like a hospital where doctors can compare outcomes and you do this way, oh, I do it this way, how is your outcome? That opportunity isn't so much there in farm animal production. And so this benchmarking process where people could see their outcome compared to others working in the same climate and the same market conditions, this was a very popular model. We were then asked to do it in Texas, in California, in the New England states. A feed additive manufacturer saw this as a service, a popular enough that it would be an extension that they could do free for their clients, and they've now hired two of our MSc graduates to deliver that program in other parts of the United States. Animal welfare science has, in a sense, well, let me digress a little bit. When my father studied agriculture in Guelph in the 1930s, his favorite subject was animal husbandry, which was the feeding, breeding, housing, management, and handling of animals, right? Then the science of nutrition emerged, physiology, genetics, and the feeding of animals became animal nutrition. The breeding of animals became animal genetics, reproductive physiology. But the housing and handling and management sort of dropped off the scientific agenda because there weren't fields of science to apply to them. Then we started to see stress physiology, veterinary epidemiology, animal behavior, and fields like this put a scientific basis into asking questions about the effects on animals of being housed and handled and managed in different ways. In a sense, it created a kind of science-informed animal husbandry. Now when my colleagues go to South America to give a talk on animal welfare to producer audiences, there may be 1,000 producers in the room. This is because animal welfare doesn't have the baggage that it may have here of a kind of stick to beat producers with. It's just seen as the new science, like reproductive physiology or animal nutrition, that is going to help solve problems. People don't want bruised animals, dehydrated animals, fighting animals, and here is some science to help achieve their objectives. So in both animal welfare research and its application through standards and other processes, it must be kept so that it is beneficial for producers. Okay, what made me nervous in this meeting? There is a universe of words and a universe of acts. At a meeting like this, we're in the universe of words. So is the whole code process development process. And I'm always nervous about whether anything in the universe of words is going to get translated into the universe of acts. But here's a story. Last year, South Korea had a foot and mouth disease outbreak. And there started to be rumblings, then confirmed by video clips, showing truckloads of pigs dumped live into deep pits where they were buried without being killed. However, the OIE at this point had a standard for the killing of animals in disease eradication plans. This, and South Korea, as a member of the organization, was part of the approval process for that standard. This allowed the OIE, Canada, through our chief veterinary officer, other countries, to put pressure on the Korean government to respect the standard that they had been part of passing. Without the standard, without having got things right in the universe of words, all this international pressure could easily have been dismissed as a kind of hollow moralizing by rich countries. Because the standard was there, I believe that helped to get the process stopped. But at every point in these processes, I think we have to be, as we try to get things right in the universe of words, we have to be constantly vigilant, constantly creative in how these changes in the universe of words are going to make a difference in the universe of acts. Okay, second area of nervousness. I think the National Farm Animal Care Council is a very powerful model. Bill Ballantyne and I co-chaired a national consultation about 10 years ago that basically said we need an organization like the National Farm Animal Care Council doing the kind of things that the National Farm Animal Care Council is currently doing. And I think now we see how badly it is needed. The thought that this organization is sort of like a contract employee on a fixed term should strike terror into all of our hearts. And I hope we will all go back to our respective corners determined to give this organization the future that it deserves. Third point of nervousness. Animal welfare is a three-dimensional issue, not in the sense that you heard, but in the sense that we need the right animals, meaning their genetic makeup, in the right management and housing system, run by the right person to deal with those animals and that management and housing system. Now, regulations tend to all be about the housing and management system. Outcome-based measures broaden that, and we've heard a lot about the human dimension in our discussions today. We haven't heard much about genetics. Sometimes the genetics itself is quite a driving factor. So, strong selection for certain production traits, increasing the risk of problems like lameness, metabolic disorders, and so on. And the production sector needs to really communicate with the breeders to get this fixed. Sometimes the problem is in this three-way interaction. In the early days of electronic sow feeding, I remember going to some farms that were early adopters of that technology, and I saw that the electronic sow feeding equipment had been moved to what John Patience used to call the research department. John pointed out that if you don't have a coordinated research effort on behalf of animal producers, everyone has to do their own research. And the research department is that pile of rusting stuff behind the barn that was bought and didn't work. Now, on these particular farms, there were two of them that I visited in the course of one trip. The particular animals and the particular producer didn't get along in a situation of electronic sow feeding, and they had to tear it out. And the animals were in horrible condition, being sort of group-fed bucket loads of feed on the floor and left to fight for it. Yeah. So we need, animal welfare isn't just about housing and management. It isn't just about the husbandry skills, important as those two things are. It is about this three-way interaction with genetics as a component. Fourth thing, this isn't nervous, this is, just check my, have I got time for a fourth thing? Susan? Good. Fourth and my last point of nervousness or reflection, why doesn't trust me cut it anymore, as David Smith put it, or as Bob Harding said about 10 years ago at a pig meeting, you know, I guess the code won't cut it anymore, no matter what kind of nice speech we make when we wave it around. Huh? But why not? Well, in North America especially, people have had tremendous trust in the family farm. the agrarian style of living. And even as late as 1950, we were hearing sociologists and social critics saying that with the industrialization of society, the great threat, particularly in America, but it applied in Canada too, the great threat to North American society was the decline of agrarian living as people moved to cities and started working in the manufacturing sector. This was seen as a real social problem. And today, when you get any child's book out of the library and look at the farm animals, what you're seeing depicted is this cherished, small, mixed family farm, right? And the critics, then, of animal production are careful to then try to dismantle that image with phrases like, well, now factory farming has replaced family farming. Well, you and I know that the level of family ownership in Canada remains very high, partly thanks to supply management, which has meant that the kind of enormous consolidation that has happened in some segments south of the border just hasn't happened here. But still, the specialized confinement, relatively large unit, really doesn't look like the trusted model of the agrarian family farm. And I think this is part of the loss of trust. But there are agrarianism and industrialism aren't the only models for occupations. A third is professionalism. Now, 100 years ago, owning 100 cattle would give you a higher income and a more elevated station in life than merely being a doctor or a surgeon. But in that 100 years, the doctors and surgeons got themselves organized into professions. Meaning what? Well, they set standards for themselves. They made sure that members of their occupational group met those standards. And those standards weren't just technical standards, but they were also standards that reflected the values and expectations of society. If animal production could shift, as it must, away from an agrarian model, it already has. If instead it could land more on a professional model than an industrial model, I think it could achieve its animal welfare outcomes and retain the kind of public trust that animal production had some time ago. Those were the reflections on this specific meeting. But I want to put up two little bits of text that are the result of thought during this meeting and some previous meetings. And I put them here to invite your comment as to whether we've got it right, as to whether have we captured the shared vision of what we're trying to achieve. And so I've put up a kind of vision statement that what we want is a comprehensive animal welfare assurance program reflecting Canadian values based on science-based national standards and involving a suite of compliance activities sufficient to ensure domestic and international confidence in the welfare of farmed animals in Canada. Okay? Then if I could have the next slide, and if I... Thank you. And then I put up a few components here, and I'm sure these will be available for comment. I'm looking forward to having your feedback on these. So what would be the components that we would look for? How about a suite of timely national standards developed through a recognized process with wide input? Recognition and use of national standards across the country, compliance activities such as quality assurance programs, hotlines, education, extension, and enforcement delivered by appropriately trained people, means of tracking public values as input into that process. A profession needs to have standards that aren't just technical standards, but also standards that reflect public values. Well-targeted multidisciplinary science, sharing of information and best practices across jurisdictions and industries. Did we get it all on? Good. So that was my attempt to capture where are we trying to reach and what are the components of trying to get there. If there is time, I would be delighted to hear your feedback on errors of omission and commission here. And in the future, I'd be very grateful if you would take these words with you and give me your feedback as we try to create this a consensus vision on where we're going. Thank you again, organizers, for this wonderful meeting, and thank you all for your wonderful participation.